And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, here's something I know you've noticed and I want to discuss. The economy seems to be recovering. We've had more jobs created last week or last month than were imagined had been created. There have been a lot of jobs created in the last week's announcement. People think that Biden is doing a good job in regard to the war in Europe. And yet, Biden's numbers sink. He doesn't get credit overall. And I don't know if the Republicans' numbers are going up, but his numbers are going down. What is it that the Democrats need to do? What is it the Democrats are doing? Who are the Democrats? To save themselves from what seems to be bad branding, because it's not related to the actual objective situation.
Yeah. Remember James Carville's admonition, it's the economy, stupid?
Yeah.
And that still remains. And there are a couple of things that your question raises. First of all, yeah, the economy, given where it was, is doing gangbusters. There have been more jobs created under Joe Biden in his first year plus than under any other presidency in history. The wages are going up. The unemployment rate is down to like 3.6%. Everything in that regard, in terms of recovery, is doing very well. However, that's the macro. And on the micro side, we have this squeeze that's been coming, partially because the economy's been doing so well, and there was a pent-up demand, that there are shortages, and so inflation has risen. I don't think it's as bad as what people are saying, but it's still significantly higher than we've had in decades. And what's occurred is they see two figures that are on the micro side. One is when they go to the grocery store, food costs a lot more. And the other one is when they go to the pump, and the pump in particular, because while the grocery store, you don't have prices listed outside, every time you pass a gas station, you see the numbers going up from 289 to 350 to 419. And you know, now it's 429 or thereabouts. So that's what sticks in front of people's minds, those things. So what really has to be done is that the Democrats have to undertake an advertising campaign that discusses the good things that are happening, that says that these dislocations are somewhat temporary. You know, they're going to last for a while, but they're going to eventually come down. And they really have to still attack other things that affect people's pocketbooks. For instance, this week, there was a vote in the House of Representatives that passed that would lower the cost of insulin. There are millions, tens of millions of Americans who are diabetic and use insulin. And the costs have been going up for no good reason other than corporate gouging, because this is not a new drug. It's not a drug that there's patents on anymore. And they voted to keep this the amount that people spend on insulin to $35 a month instead of 100 or more that they're spending. 193 Republicans voted against that. That's what the Democrats...
On what basis?
Well,
was there any debate about this? Did any Republican explain why they thought insulin should cost $100 and not $30?
Yeah, well, they don't say it should cost $100. They said that the government shouldn't be fooling around with prices, and that it would only hurt things in the long run. You know,
So what is it that what are Democrats doing when these reactionaries say the government shouldn't be monkeying with prices, shouldn't intervene in the market? Why shouldn't it? During the war, during World War II, there was price controls. What was wrong with that? Otherwise, there would have been runaway price gouging.
Well, the thing is that it's not just that you put a price control on it. What you really have to do is you have to go after the gouging. Like the gasoline prices, for instance, and we all know what happens at the pump. The price of oil goes up on the oil market per barrel, and the price at the pump immediately goes up. The price of oil goes down at the barrel, and the price doesn't come down, or it doesn't come down nearly as quickly. So they really should be going after the oil companies and making them the bad guys instead of making the Democrats the bad guys. They've tried to do this, but their attempts are pretty feeble, and their PR is terrible about this thing. People will understand that. People don't like the oil companies, and it gives them a secondary attack, saying, look, we should be developing or getting away from our dependence on oil, and because all the bad guys in the world run on oil. Russia, Iran, Venezuela, Saudi Arabia, all those guys. And the Republicans don't want that. You know, it's more or less the Koch brothers don't want that. You know, they're in Russia. They're making their money from there and from the petroleum products. But the Democrats have to have it's a simple contrast. And they should have simple ads for this. This is what they should have been doing when the Build Back Better failed. They should have come right back and put all of the popular things to a separate vote. They should have had, okay.
Why do you think they didn't?
That's a good question, because they're locked into these big bill type of things. They want to do everything at once. They don't want to have to do this separation. I don't know. I don't really have a good reason for it.
But I don't think it's the big bill thing. I think it's because they basically, many of them, don't really support the demands of working people. They support is meritocracy. What they support is economic efficiency. What they support is the free market. I mean, in the last week, we had a candidate that Biden put up to run the Labor Department's Office of Wages and Hours. That office's job is very simple. It's to protect workers. Now, in the current situation, in the last 30 years, government more or less has taken over the job that unions had played in the 20 or 30 years preceding that in trying to defend wages and hours, and making sure that workers got paid the wages that were legally or by contract mandated. And it was the Office of the Wages and Hours Division that did that. So now Biden, nominated a guy who did that job under Obama. The Democrats defeated him. Kelly, Sinema from Arizona, and Manchin voted against him. And why? Because Kelly pointed out businessmen called him and complained about how aggressive he had been in defending workers' wages when he worked for Obama. Therefore, he had to vote against him. And Manchin said exactly the same thing. Sinema, of course, said nothing. Now, you can't have a Democratic Party which does that, even though the Democrats say, well, they're on their own. They're independent. We can't discipline them. But the world thinks of the Democratic Party as a unified group. You can't, if Democrats, prominent Democrats, do that, it's not a question of big bills. It's a question that people look at the Democrats and say, this is not a group that supports me. Why should I support them? That's what I think is the story.
Yeah, well, that's it. The irony, of course, is then they support Republicans
who also don't support, or they don't vote.
Right.
They don't vote. Working people don't vote.
And the Republicans are working overtime to make sure they don't vote.
That's right. So now let's take a look at the situation here in Pennsylvania, where we have a very interesting election, especially on the Democrat. Well, on both sides for the Senate.
It's the first time we've had a senator and a governor up at the same time where there's no incumbent in decades.
Right. So on the Democratic side, basically, you got three guys running. You got John Fetterman, you got Conor Lamb, and you got Kenyatta down in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah. There's one or two others, but those are the only three.
But those are the three that count.
Right.
Now, as I understand it, Fetterman has an enormous lead over Lamb in the popular polling, right? Not in the polling of the Democratic Party people,
right,
the Democratic Party officials,
mm-hmm,
but among the registered Democrats and in the public at large, Fetterman is, what, 30 points up over Lamb?
Yeah, yeah.
30 points? That's like staggering.
Yeah. Well, you've heard me say ever since he was elected lieutenant governor, and he won that primary for lieutenant governor, that I thought he was the most popular politician in the Commonwealth.
So why do the Democratic officials oppose him? And they do. Across the board, they oppose him, except in the rural counties where they support him. But in the big counties, in Allegheny County, which endorsed Conor Lamb, and in Philadelphia, which endorsed where the machine endorsed Conor Lamb, why do they do that?
Because they see in Conor Lamb the same things that you talked about as Democrats. They see this fellow who's moderate, who doesn't have, who's non-corrupt, but just generally in the middle of road things, and the Bob Casey type of mold that traditionally has won elections in Pennsylvania, even among Republicans, the more moderates, the Tom Ridges type of people. But this is not where the people are today at this point. And, as you said, it looks like Fetterman is going to wipe this thing up, and then it'll be interesting as to what happens, for the.
Can you imagine Fetterman against McCormick?
That's going to be, that'd be a real interesting race. The hedge fund guy versus the guy,
The tattooed guy.
The tattooed guy, the goatee tattooed guy in black shorts.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if it's going to be McCormick. I mean, the way it's going, there's been over $50 million spent by Republicans in that primary campaign so far between him and Oz. And they're going at each other, with negative ads and dark money support groups. And traditionally, what happens is when you have negative ads, it doesn't really help the candidate who's running the negative ads. What it tends to do is just suppresses votes. People aren't going to vote for Oz because he says bad things about McCormick, or vote for McCormick because he says bad things about Oz. It just means it turns people off. So
that's right, especially in a situation where people don't really understand how government works. They just they see the top line headline, and since they don't think they get any benefits from what the government is doing, since both sides really, in Pennsylvania for sure, don't think government should do very much, and therefore the government doesn't do very much, they just turn away from politics altogether as if it has no role.
Yeah.
Whereas in fact it determines their lives whether they realize it or not.
Yeah. Now you talk about what the Democrats, the in people in the Democratic Party who they support. The Republicans tend to fall in line much more with their leadership. But here again, it's kind of split. And Oz is such a strain because of it. He's so well known. He's a TV personality. His name is known, that the people who don't really follow things, when they get in there, the rural counties and what have you, they might just pick Oz over McCormick, and there still might be a third party in there. I think I sent you a note this week, and I forget, there was also the issue of placement on the ballot and where folks are and what they're.
Well, from that point of view, on the Republican side, McCormick didn't do too well.
No,
he's in the middle, right? They've got eight candidates, and he's ranked
he's kind of in the middle,
fifth or sixth, or something like that.
course, Fetterman's at the bottom of the ballot. From experience, when I ran for delegate to the national convention in the old 17th congressional district, that was your area. There were 10 of us running, and I had number 10, and I wound up losing by only a not a lot of votes. Because in the outlying areas I wasn't known, I did very well here in the part of Lackawanna County that was then there. But so it can matter in a tight race.
I always thought that if you're either first or last, people notice it. It's in the middle, it's no good.
Well, the middle isn't. First is always the best place to be.
Yeah.
First is always the best place to be.
But so, look, the Democrats, I mean, I know it's a joke. I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat.
Right.
Will Rogers said that in the 1930s, and Democrats have been repeating it ever since as if that's something to be proud of, but it's nothing to be proud of. In my county, in Susquehanna County, between 2014 and 2018, the number of registered Democrats fell by 10%. In that four-year period, the number of Republican registrations rose by 7%. Between 2018 and 2021, the number of registered Democrats fell by another 7.5%. And in that same period, the number of GOP registrations rose by another nearly 10%. That's a hell of a trend. One goes down by 20 points, one goes up by 20 points.
Yeah.
The Susquehanna Democrats, 37% of them are older than 65. Okay. Only 23% of the Susquehanna Republicans are older than 65. Mm-hmm. If that's not an organization that's living. That's an organization that's literally dying.
Yeah. You know, they said around the country, a lot of times now, the number one political affiliation is independent. But here, what you're talking about, it's different. If people were leaving the Democratic Party and registering independent would be one thing, but they're registering Republican.
That's right. And I'll go back to Susquehanna County. We have nearly 27,000 people registered. Of that group, 16,000 are Republicans, 7,000 are Democrats, and only 2,000 are no party.
Yeah. But it's even, it's even worse now in Lackawanna and Luzerne County. Lackawanna County used to be 2-1. And over the last several years, the margin of in favor of the Republicans, the Democratic margin decreased by 3,200 votes. That's a lot of votes. In Luzerne County, they always used to be like a 60-40 county Democrat or more. A Democrat could count. Not that long ago, coming out of that county with maybe a 25,000 vote margin on the ballot, and now the difference is only down to 12,000 votes in Luzerne County. And I keep hearing from the powers that be down there, "Oh, we're working on it. We're gonna have voter registration." There's nothing happening. There's nothing happening. And if Luzerne County flips, that's a big deal. Already, the county has a majority of Republicans on the county council. The Democratic Party is just, they're doing nothing, basically, or whatever they're doing is counterproductive.
Well, the Democratic Party has a very weird feature, statewide and in the counties. There is no way, until this last December, there was no way for the Democratic State Committee to discuss policy. There was no mechanism to have policy debates. In the counties, for example, in the Susquehanna County Committee, there's no way for anybody to bring up what should be Democratic Party policy in the county on county issues or on any issue.
In other words, what do they do?
They don't do anything. They talk about fundraising. They talk about planning the next picnic or Democratic Party meeting or whatever. They don't discuss policies. So therefore, there's no vibrancy here. There's no intellectual political life, really.
Yeah. Now, of course, the Republicans, their national convention the last time they didn't discuss policy was all personality.
But no, they purposely did not issue a party program for the first time.
Yeah. Now, they have come out. Rick Scott has come out now with a policy that everybody should have what they call skin in the game. This is how they sell it. And everybody should pay income tax. So that, but of course, what that does is that's regressive. Remember, I used to call them the regressives?
Yeah.
Because now they want people, right now, if, you know, in families, what is the personal exemptions, what, 26,000 or something? So you got a couple, you're over 50,000, you're not going to pay any federal income tax. Now he wants everybody to pay income tax. If you're earning $7.25 an hour, which the Republicans refuse to raise, you know, what's that, $18,000 a year, somewhere around that? They want you on top of all the other
taxes. No, it's less than $15,000 a year.
$15,000 a year. Yeah. You're going to, you know, they want you to pay income tax on that.
Yeah.
But they won't raise the rates on the billionaires and the billionaires.
Right.
And the Democrats don't know how to take advantage of that. They should have a whole series of ads contrasting under Republicans and under Democrats. And what it is, it has to be persistent. It has to be time after time after time, election after election. Remember, Rush Limbaugh spent 25 years destroying the Democratic brand, or he called it the Democrat brand, and the liberal brand. And the Democrats have to invest. Remember Falk's first rule that I've derived from that Lewis Powell memo. The first rule of political influence is to think long term. That's what you have to do. And they're not even thinking short term at this point.
No, no. Well, getting back to Pennsylvania, you take Fetterman. He's 30 points up over Lamb, according to the most recent polls. Where he's especially strong is in the rural counties. He actually pulls in Republican-leaning independents.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think he... against Dave McCormick, he'd be a big foil out there for McCormick would be a big foil for him.
So look at what the Democrats have the possibility of doing. Shapiro is going to be the gubernatorial nominee. There's nobody running against him. He's already chosen what's his name, Austin
Davis,
a black legislator from Allegheny County, the West, as his running mate. It's a pretty powerful 1-2-3 punch if you send Davis into Philadelphia. Your campaign, if you're Shapiro, you campaign night and day together with Fetterman in the rest of the state.
Right.
You've got a real chance of not just winning, but of producing a cataclysm against the Republicans. I don't see anybody talking like that.
No. No, because we're not through the primary yet. Fetterman hasn't won it yet, but it should be.
And, no, but because the people in Allegheny County, the Democratic Party committee people, and in Philadelphia, the Democratic Party committee people, and in fact, the Democratic Party people in most of the Democratic county committees, which are as weak, disorganized, and brainless as the one in Susquehanna County, support Conor Lamb, even though he's 30 points under. So why would they talk about how they're going to maximize the possibilities during the campaign? When they seem to be determined to choose the weakest candidate, because why? Because he's like them.
He looks like them.
Yeah.
The problem that's a problem because they don't look like the rural or the
they don't look like the working class Pennsylvanians. They're not.
Right. They're not.
You know.
They're not. Fetterman does.
Yeah.
Fetterman does.
Yeah.
So that's going to be. We'll see. You know, we're now what 5-6 weeks away from the election.
Yeah. I don't see how Lamb makes up 30 points unless he can somehow make sure that nobody votes.
And his ads aren't going to make it up. His ads aren't going to make it up. He's appealing to the people who to defend democracy instead of defending the pocketbook.
Defend democracy? That's
Tom Friedman wrote a big article about this maybe a year or so ago. Said that's too distant for people. You know, they want the more immediate issues. It's the proper idea. We have to.
You know, there's two forms of democracy that used to be talked about in America. There was political democracy and industrial democracy, right? There was even an organization called the League for Industrial Democracy. They were big proponents of unions. In other words, you want democracy across the board, you've got to have a strong union movement that makes sure that the 150 million American workers and their families get a fair shake in the distribution of the profits that their labor creates, right?
Right.
Well, you don't hear that from the Democrats across the board. Just the opposite. No. You hear the kind of crap that you heard from Kelly Manchin about the defense of the Wages and Hours Act is against business interests, and therefore they're against it.
Yeah.
Well, that's not democracy.
No. Meanwhile, we're starting to see more and more from the bottom up with the workers of the world are rising.
With Amazon, vote. Right? Big thing in Amazon in Staten Island.
Yeah. Where they had fired a guy for union organizing, and the they won the vote. They won the vote.
In a unit that has 8,000 people. That's a gigantic unit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Starbucks has been unionizing shop by shop. There was one shop, I think in Seattle, where they had 9 workers. That's good, but it's not going to get you what the same as 8,000 workers are going to get you.
That's right.
And the power. You know, and talk about warehousing. This past week, last week, I was down in Virginia for a family affair, and coming back up on the highway in 81. It's all warehouses that you're seeing all the way up. And we had it because of that tragic accident. We had a detour. We're fortunate not to get caught up in that. We went over 78 and took the turnpike coming up. And on 78, you have all of these warehouses.
Well, if you come across 81 and you leave Hazleton and come in toward Wilkes-Barre, it's one warehouse after another.
Yeah, down there in Pittston, the development of Bob Miracle. And there's going to be another warehouse that they announced this week just off of the Davis Street exit, the Montage exit of 81, where there was an old manufacturing plant. Warehousing is the new manufacturing in terms of masses of workers and what have you.
And the Teamsters have a new leader, not a Hoffa, a guy who wants to organize.
Well, it seems to be, I think you're going to start seeing that. Question is, will you see it down south or whatever? The thing about warehousing is you can't move a warehouse from Pennsylvania to Florida and get the same distribution of values. You know?
That's exactly right.
We're in the hub of everything. The lack of, the northeastern Pennsylvania, the Lehigh Valley, we're the ones that are within 5 hours of, couple hundred million people, 100 million people.
That's right.
Between Boston and Pittsburgh and Washington and that whole yard. You don't want a warehouse in Southern Florida where it takes 2 days to get something up to.
It's not worthwhile. That's right. Especially if you don't have fast rail service.
Yeah.
Which the Republicans oppose.
Yeah. Again, another thing that there should be a contrast. The Democrats should be just having anti-Republican ads just contrasting over and over and over again. Who are they going to offend? Republicans?
Right. Right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week, I think. We've come to an end.
Yeah.
I want to, before we leave, I want to greet Sarah Palin, who's joined the race for the House seat in Alaska. She joins 37 other candidates running for that seat.
Yeah. And I want to congratulate Deborah Lipsaff for finally getting Senate approval as the envoy against anti-Semitism.
Eight months by Ron Johnson?
By Ron Johnson. And then when the committee vote came in, 9 Republicans voted against her. This is someone who is probably the best qualified person in America to talk about anti-Semitism.
She's the historian of anti-Semitism.
Yeah, yeah.
A distinguished historical career.
Yeah, and that should be pointed out, that how many Republicans actually opposed her. They let Ron Johnson be the front man for that.
But when it came to the House vote, or the Senate vote, none of them showed up.
Right. They ran.
So it just showed it was all for nothing. It was all for play. It was all for show. Because if they had really believed it, they'd have showed up on the Senate floor to vote against her. But they didn't bother.
Right. They didn't want to have that vote recorded. So
No.
All right. Well, got another week coming.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.